What if there were a fountain of youth pill that could add decades to your life? Would you take it? Unlocking the Fountain is a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or even reverse it.
When do you think we're going to have the first 150-year-old? I think that person's already alive.
Unlocking the Fountain. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm AC Rowe, sitting in for Tom Power. Welcome to Q. Okay, you know that feeling when you're passing a truck on the highway and all the air is getting sucked up into its slipstream and you just start holding your breath and praying that you're going to make it through this whole situation alive? Just me? There is a new movie that feels exactly like that. It's kind of like the film equivalent of gripping the steering wheel. The movie is called Cold Road. It's about a woman who's trying to get to her hometown in time to say goodbye to her dying mom. But she and her dog are being hunted on this isolated highway by a stranger in a semi-truck. Cold Road is directed by Kelvin Redvers. He's part of a nearly fully indigenous cast and crew, including Métis Cree star Roseanne Supernault. Kelvin dropped by the Q studio to talk to Tom about making this movie. And Tom started out by asking him how the film has been received, not just by the people watching, but also by their smartwatches.
I've heard that people are having like their heart rate monitors are going off while they're watching this film.
Heart rate monitors going off. People's wrists are being squeezed by their partners. We had a screening in Vancouver of this movie, Cold Road. And there was a friend of a friend who wears a heart rate or like a Apple Watch that keeps track of her heart throughout the movie. As she was watching, her watch just kept being like, dzz, dzz, dzz. And she was like, "What? Like, who the heck is calling me right now? Like, what? Why is somebody texting me during this movie?" She found out later that what was actually happening was that literally her heart rate was so high while watching this movie that her watch was warning her. It was saying, dzz, "Your heart rate is too high. Your heart rate is too high." And then at the after party, she showed us, and her Apple Watch was literally dozens and dozens and dozens of notifications for her to be concerned because her heart rate was too high watching this movie.
Does that concern from her sound feel like validation to you?
Oh my God, you cannot have a better compliment as a filmmaker than that. Because like anybody can say your movie was great, but like, you know, how do you know what they're really saying? But like, this is physical. Like, it's palpable.
Another way that the success of this film is palpable is sort of like how it's been growing and how it's becoming really well known. I wonder if you could talk us through this a little bit. Like, it's getting started off screening in sort of smaller theaters, and it's growing from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Dene. I'm from the Northwest Territories, and usually in the film industry, like, the way a lot of movies become successful is they start in the cities, right? They'll play in Toronto, they'll play in Vancouver, or like in the US, it's like LA and New York. Often with Canadian movies, the movie will play maybe for a week in like a Toronto or a Vancouver, but if enough people don't go to it, then it just kind of vanishes. You have all these movies that just sort of disappear. This movie was successful backwards. As in, we didn't start in the Torontos, or the Montreals of the world. We started playing in Yellowknife. We started playing in Iqaluit. We started playing in Red Deer and all of these small remote places across Canada. And it was successful. We found out people were like road tripping to like go see this movie because it's so different and unique. But it was successful in those small theaters that it played it, right? We were beating Hollywood movies at these small theaters. And so all of the other nearby independent cinemas go like, oh, well, what's this movie all about? We should play that movie also. So it held at the theaters that we played at, and then it started to play at even more theaters the next weekend. So then we were playing in like North Battleford, Saskatchewan, or like Meadow Lake, or like Wetaskiwin. And it would kick ass. Like it would like pack houses. In North Battleford, Saskatchewan, this movie, Cold Road, was sold out for several nights in a row so that people were trying to go to Cold Road and they couldn't for days in a row because it was sold out in all these little places. And that's like, this is pretty unprecedented for like a type of movie like this to have that success. But then it played more movies or more theaters. And slowly, then it started to play the Edmontons, the Torontos, the Calgarys. And at this point, this little Dene Indigenous feature film has beaten 80% of all Canadian movies at the box office over the past 2 years, which I don't know. I think is pretty cool for first-time filmmaker from Northwest Territories making a feature film, you know, about where he grew up.
And let me just set it up a little bit here. Set your story up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you grew up in Hay River.
Hay River, Northwest Territories.
In Northwest Territories. What was Hay River like for a kid growing up there?
Well, I think when you're like a little kid, it's great. So if you're like 6, 7, 8, you can just be like set loose. And it's like, okay, yeah, you know, come back at sundown. That's fine. When you become a teenager, it's the worst thing in the world, or like it feels like it.
Why?
Well, it's just like there's that feeling of nothing to do. Like, you know, you feel left out from the rest of the world. So like even just like as simple as like fast food, mm-hmm. it's like you see all the commercials like, oh man, McDonald's, that's a 5-hour drive if I wanted to get a Big Mac. That sucks. I feel left out.
Was there a shop you could get a burger at? Was there somewhere to go?
We had a KFC for 3 years and then it closed down, which was super disappointing.
That's heartbreaking.
It was really heartbreaking.
One thing that accompanies that when you're from a place that's, again, you put it eloquently, not the Torontos and Montreals of the world, is that there, in addition to fast food restaurants that you can't go to, there are also pursuits that don't necessarily feel accessible to you. And I might add filmmaking to that. So when did you decide that you were interested in making films? And was that a path that was accessible to you?
So since I was 15, I've been making movies since I was like 15, 16, 17. And I would actually make short films with my friends, and then we would send them to like film festivals around the world because that was starting to become more of a thing. And then the films I made in Hay River, Northwest Territories would win awards at like major film festivals around everywhere, like Austria. Like I made a 30-minute short film that played at a film festival in Long Island, New York. It won the top prize. They flew me to Long Island, New York, you know, and I'm like a 17-year-old kid from Northwest Territories. So I guess it felt possible. I think the things that always felt out of reach was sort of the upper echelons of like mass media. It's like watching the nightly talk shows, right? The like the Jay Leno's or the Conan O'Briens, and just being like, oh, I'm not there. Like people like me aren't there. But I think because for whatever reason, I've never felt that I couldn't belong in those sorts of places, or like that there was a lacking of like, well, why couldn't someone like me be in places like that? And when I started making movies, I had that feeling of like, well, why not? Like, why can't a Dene Indigenous kid from Northwest Territories, you know, be a Spielberg or be a Scorsese or that kind of thing? I don't know why I have that. Mm-hmm. I just do. And so even then, it, like, you know, my goal was to make a feature film. And it took 20 plus years to be able to get to this point because it's incredibly difficult to make movies.
Cold Road is the story of Tracy, an Indigenous woman who's hurrying to make the 12-hour drive to her childhood home to see her mom before she passes away.
Tracy, where are you at?
Not far outside Fort McKenzie.
Okay, not bad. You've got about 5 hours more to go.
Don't remind me.
How are the roads?
Quiet. Not bad so far. How's mom doing? Mom's not doing so good, Trace.
And it doesn't take long before she sees that she's being followed by a man in a truck who really toys with her, playing dangerous games, passing her, and then breaking hard in front of her. And she has to rely on her own devices if she has any hope of getting away. While a compelling story, I think the movie also really calls to attention the vulnerability that Indigenous women feel every day. It was hard to watch this film and not think about missing and murdered Indigenous women. When you were coming up with the story, was there any particular story on your mind?
It was inspired both by where I grew up in the Northwest Territories and feeling that, hey, this is an interesting place I haven't seen on screen. It was inspired by a lot of movies from the past. So like thrillers from the 80s and the 70s. And it kind of put all of these pieces together. But once I kind of came up with this core idea of what if you had a woman and her dog up against a truck in the middle of the Canadian Arctic? And just what if the movie was that simple? And I believe that just that little premise, like, yeah, it's a woman and a dog up against a truck in the Arctic. That's captivating to me. And so even 3, 4 years ago, that was like, yeah, I could see that. And create a captivating story around that. So it wasn't setting out to make a missing and murdered Indigenous woman story, but it's impossible not to include those themes once you get to it. And so there's a scene with a police officer, there's a scene with like truckers and that kind of thing. So it engages with it, but it wasn't the sort of starting place of how this movie came about.
I understand. What was the, but connect the dots for me on the, you know, I want to make something, I want to make something that people really get. And all of a sudden I had this idea of a woman and her dog in a truck being chased by, you know, in a car being chased by a truck. what possibly could have inspired that? Where were you? Were you walking and saw a truck or something like that?
Where, I can't even remember the original inspiration. I think it was kind of from a collection of places. It was, I was actually working at a TV production company that did Highway Through Hell, like, you know, that like the series about the tow trucks that they'll clear out the crashes on the Coquihalla, like in BC. So it just was in this world of kind of metal and snow and chrome. And I think that was what was on my mind. On top of, I think I'd rewatched Duel, the like Spielberg movie. And so I had, and I believe I was visiting home, like, you know, up in the Northwest Territories, between towns, it's like, you know, 3 hours, 5 hours sometimes to get places. And, you know, that's a fascinating arena for drama, I believe, especially if you put in, you know, a killer trucker.
Is it based on a real life stretch of highway in the Northwest Territories?
It's based on a mix of different places. So like between where I grew up and my First Nation is where we actually shot the movie. But like it's kind of inspired by all the highways. If anybody listening has ever driven, you know, in Northern Alberta or like Northern BC, Saskatchewan, like, you know, we all, I think there's that feeling of being on a road at night in the winter that has a vibe to it.
Yeah.
There's a feeling to it that we can all connect to.
I don't like doing it. I mean, in Newfoundland, where I'm from, I don't really like driving on the highway at night. I'll sometimes like wake up right at sunrise just to try and not drive on the highway, at, you know, on certain highways at night.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a familiarity I think that we can tap into, again, that I just don't think has been seen on screen of like this type of movie.
Can you describe what it's like to drive on that stretch of road you mentioned from your hometown?
Well, so that there was I once flipped a truck on a highway like that. So I was going to pick up my sister in Fort Simpson, which was a 5-hour drive from Hay River to Fort Simpson. It was a Sunday morning. I passed nobody on the highway. And then 4 hours in, I flipped a truck.
Oh, my Lord. What happened?
I was okay, thankfully. But I was waiting there in the cold, in the snow for about 25 minutes until someone else drove by. Thankfully, the truck did a full flip and landed on its wheels. But
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But so it's like, you
was
know.
Was it black eyes?
It was black eyes, yeah.
Oh, how terrifying.
Yes, yeah. There's a palpable danger to these places.
And, for sure.
Yeah.
In Newfoundland, it's largely moose related. You're just getting, you're worried about striking moose or something like that.
Well, just in terms of like, if something goes wrong, like you really are by yourself.
Right.
And so that's the thrust of what Tracy faces when she's like, you know, she's all by herself. And slowly as she goes along, you know, she's trying to get back to her mother before her mother passes away. And so is taking a few more risks than she should before she figures out what this trucker is doing to, you know, try to take her down basically. And by the time she figures out what's happening, it's too late and she has no choice but to fight. And that's sort of the thrust of the exciting part when the movie gets into the, you know, the fun of it.
I'm AC Rowe, sitting in for Tom Power. You're listening to Q. More of Tom's conversation with Kelvin Redvers coming up.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Were you thinking about that truck flipping when you were coming up with the story,
yeah,
when you were making this?
Absolutely. In fact, when we were getting ready to shoot this movie, we were location scouting. The movie starts with a car crash. We like have a car crashing and we were going to location scout where we were going to film this car crash. And then we witnessed a car crash.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
It was crazy. Like, luckily everybody survived, but like a car drove like 90 kilometers into like a truck and just smashed. So there was all of those vibes were definitely put into the movie. And I think that's what has led to all those people having those kind of reactions of like heartbeat, because we know what that feels like to like lose control on ice.
And there's sort of a palpable tension that comes to driving on the highway next to a big truck anyway. And I don't think any of us really, like, if anyone's listening to this right now on the highway, whenever you have to like pass a semi, it's never really a fun thing to do. But yeah. I can imagine imagine watching a crash right as you're, and that must increase the tension for you when you're making this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think so where we started with the woman who was watching the movie and was having her heartbeat. So that's very normal of if you want a scary, spooky thriller, this is the movie, like a nice cozy Friday night movie. And we've had other stories where like a husband and a wife will come up and the husband will say that like, my wife almost broke my hand. She was squeezing it so hard. Like the movie is that, but also on the sort of indigenous side of it, you know, I also believe that this tells a really powerful, poignant story of an indigenous woman who's going through grief of trying to get home to see her mother. And one of the other compliments that we've gotten from the movie that I think can really speak to the value of a movie like this. So we did a screening at the Rio in Vancouver, and there was an indigenous elder who really wanted to go see this movie. And so she messaged us and she was like, hey, I'm a pensioner. I can't afford to go. Could you just, you know, could you cop me a ticket?
And we said, and yes. You said, too bad.
Yeah, that's right. Get out of here. I said, no problem. 100%. She's really lovely.
Yeah.
And then I warned her, though. I was like, this movie's really intense, just so you know. And she responded, it's okay. I've had an intense life. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Come see this movie. And so as soon as the movie finished, right, it's this like thrilling, gripping story of this indigenous woman who is in danger the entire time, who goes through hell and comes back. And then it has this really thrilling ending and it's really powerful. Immediately after the movie finished, this indigenous elder, probably 60 or 70, immediately went to Roseanne Supernault, who's our lead actress, and hugged her while the credits were playing and cried for a good 2 minutes. And they just hugged in front of everybody while the credits were rolling. And apparently what this elder whispered to Roseanne while this was happening was, you did a beautiful job representing all of us as indigenous people.
What does that mean to you?
It makes me cry. Because this movie is both. It is both the thrills. It is both the like watching a truck come close to a car and just that sort of palpable tension. But it is also the story that doesn't get told in cinema of like this like, you know, the story of what it can be like to be an indigenous person out there in the world. While packaging all of that into, you know, kind of a gritty, tense thriller.
The story that doesn't get told in cinema, but also those who don't get welcomed into necessarily the cinema spaces. The first time I ever heard of you was in 2022, and we were sitting at I was watching the news one day or reading the CBC.ca or something like that, and I saw the story about you that you, it was 2022, you were at the Cannes Film Festival, and you were wearing a tuxedo, and you were wearing moccasins, and you were... Not allowed into a function, a gathering?
No, they kicked me off the red carpet.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So I was with a cohort of indigenous producers that we got funded by the FILMBA program with, I think, the ISO and a few other people contributed. But the goal was like, hey, there just isn't enough indigenous folks that are like in the upper echelons of cinema. We need to make that happen. So let's bring these indigenous producers to Cannes. And, you know, the French are pretty stodgy. So we knew that there's like dress codes for the red carpet. You have to wear formal wear. So it's like, you know, bow tie, black tux, that kind of thing. But the understanding was that like, you know, if a Scottish person shows up in a kilt, that's okay because everybody understands that's formal for a Scottish person or, an Indian with a sari. And so for me, as a Dene person, moccasins are traditional and they are formal wear. That's what people get married in. Like, you know, when the legislative assembly, you know, everybody's in moccasins. So I wore my moccasins and then I was on the red carpet and they're like, get the F out. Like, you can't wear these.
What was your reaction when they said that?
Devastated.
What did they say? Did they say like, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to be here?
It went up through a bunch of managers. Then eventually there was this really aggressive bouncer who just was like, get out, get out, get out, get out. When our team was trying to explain to them like this is formal wear, and so that feeling of being someone who shows up and is like, hey, here's my native thing, it's pretty cool, like I'm gonna be indigenous here, and they're like, get out of here. That isn't unlike, I think, a lot of what it can feel like sometimes to be in the industry. Like it's just so hard to get these types of projects off the ground, and just getting this movie into existence was such a struggle. But I think that the reaction to it is an indicator that there is a desire for these types of movies. And I think that, you know, we don't want anybody to watch this movie because it's like, you know, you don't take pity on us. Like, you know, we want to create captivating, exciting, thrilling stories that then people go, oh, this is different than what I've seen before. And it takes a lot of energy and effort to like bulldoze these movies into existence. And, you know, to have the reaction this movie has had across the country is sort of empowering to be like, okay, like this is what we want more of. But, you know, it's like there's a really challenging financial incentive to cinema, right? It's different than like novel writing or like, you know, painting, because it's just the film process is so freaking expensive.
It costs a ton of money.
Millions of dollars.
You know, you want to make a record in your basement, you can make a record in your basement. You want to write a book, just get a quill. I don't know what year it is, but you know what I mean? You can make something happen. Films are, I mean, you're talking minimum budget, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, someone's going to correct me on that, but you know what I mean? If not millions, it's a challenging endeavor, and you have to require a lot of people to believe in you in order to be able to do that.
Yeah, and so that's why, you know, the Scorsese and the Spielbergs of the world, they can get millions of dollars. But I don't know. I believe it's simpler than people think for there to be more movies like Cold Road. And I believe that the way to get there, the way to get more of these types of movies is $5.
How do you mean?
So right now, Cold Road is available to rent or buy online on all the platforms like Amazon, Apple, YouTube, and it's $5 to rent, $10 to buy. Right now, people will spend $5, $10 on a Scorsese movie, but they aren't spending $5 on an indigenous film. And so I don't know how many people are listening, but like 100,000, 400,000?
On cue?
Yeah.
38.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
If everybody who's listening literally pulled out their phone and just like found it on Amazon or Apple or whatever and just put beep $5, like that is the difference between there being future indigenous movies or no indigenous movies. Something like The Killers of the Flower Moon, for example, had just come out, and like, you know, the attention that movies like that get versus some of these smaller indigenous films, the difference of getting there is just people spending $5 to like rent a movie and then watch it, enjoy it, and then, you know, probably or hopefully tell their friends about it. I believe that truly and deeply that all of us are a part of, you know, bringing more of these stories to the world, and the cost of it is your $5, whoever's listening right now out there.
Well, then now I understand even better why it's so meaningful for you that this is having such grassroots success, success first in these small theaters across the country. I mean, it's a story you don't hear very often anymore in this digital era.
Yeah, we hit number 3 for pre-orders on Apple TV, like in the lead up to the digital release of this movie. So we went from, you know, playing Yellowknife and Iqaluit to slowly building this huge audience. And before the movie released, more people had pre-ordered this movie than had pre-ordered the new Coen Brothers movie that is out right now in theaters. And so, like, you know, it's all a dream right now.
Congratulations on the film. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Did you catch what Kelvin said right at the beginning of that conversation about people road tripping to Yellowknife to see the movie when it first came out? Can you imagine? I mean, driving there, sure, fun, yeah, good times. Driving back home after watching that movie? That's like going to the circus after watching the movie It. That was Tom Powers' conversation with director and producer Kelvin Redvers. His film Cold Road is available on demand now, so you can watch it at home. No road tripping required. Hey, check out our other episode today. You can hear Tom's conversation with Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age. I'm Issy Rowe, sitting in for Tom Power. Thanks for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.